and there is no gong, and it's been a month since my last podcast. Yes, I've been away, and actually for the last month there hasn't been much going on other than the usual training. But I did get asked this question, which usually happens if I'm away too long, and someone asked me, what's my daily life like now that I've been doing Bagua Zhang for almost 16 years continuously, and I'm doing the I Ching for more than 30 years, and I'm basically a Taoist as well. What's it mean in the urban setting of every day? And I had a look through some of my podcasts and books to see if I've already covered this topic. And I have sort of covered it, talking about training and how long much I practice. But there was one part of it I don't think I've actually mentioned, and that's actually like, how does it fit with everyday work, for example? So I'm going to give you a rundown of my life as it is. Now, you guys know that I train every day. I do in the morning, after any time I get, but what actually happens? So, after I've left home, I'll walk up the street, go to the train station, and as I'm waiting, I'll pull out a book, and usually the book has something to do with martial arts, Taoism, sometimes a fantasy or a fiction as well. Just something to amuse the time, to keep the mental training going, because you can't do much else. Get on the train. For those of you who don't understand, living in Sydney, when we talk about the train, it looks like a train is a train, but it's very similar to overseas when they talk about the U-Bahn or the Metro or the London Underground. It's the same thing. But in Sydney, we call it the train because it actually has got the same configurations as a regular train, and it runs on the tracks like a regular train as well. So we get on the train, sit down. Our trains here are double story, sit somewhere face forward, and then I'm riding the train to the first interchange I need to go to, which is from my home, which is Meadowbank. I'll go to Strathfield, I'll change over. Over there, it's another 5-minute wait, and then I'm going to Parramatta. And then I go to work. Now, while I'm on the train, as I mentioned before, I'll continue to read, or I will do some meditation, or I will do what is more likely, I'll do some releasing on some part of myself where the energy has gotten stuck. Now, as hard as it may appear to people, we think that when we are cultivating our qi, our jing, or our shin, it'll just keep flowing. We will just keep, cultivating and drawing this in, but it can actually get stuck within the body. With releasing, what we're doing is we are getting rid of the unstuckness that's blocking the drain, so to speak, so that we can have nice continuous flow within us. So I'm doing these things. Most people don't know what I'm doing. They're not even aware of it that I'm doing, because I'm just doing quietly. And then after I get off the train at Parramatta Station, I'll turn right, head towards the new section of Parramatta, go to the office, go up to my floor, sign in, swipe the card, get my laptop, go and sit down at the desk and start working. And what I'm doing is basically cashiering. And while I'm doing cashiering, I am thinking about Bagua Zhang. I am thinking about Taoism. I am thinking about anything to do that is aligned with those paths. You know, playing Go. I don't know. I'm sometimes thinking of these days about Toina, the massage. It's all aligned. So I'm usually thinking about these things while I'm doing cashiering. Is it mindless work doing cashiering? Yes and no. It's office work. It pays the bills. In that regard, it's an all right job. most of the time it's cruisy, and then at the end of financial quarter, it gets really busy. We have to do overtime, and then, which means we get time and a half, get paid more, and carry on. At the end of the day, I go home. Now, going back to the work, what is interesting is that with the Indians and Asians that know me, they get a hint something's going on, and they're aligned with it through their cultures, and they think what I'm doing is pretty cool, and they're quite impressed, because for a lot of them, they've never met someone who is a Taoist. They've never met someone who is a Bagua Zhang practitioner who does it every day, and they find all of this stuff inspiring. At the same time, I'm discovering that I'm becoming something like an energy healer, and so I help to heal them with their own stuckness, and I just remind them, I say, please don't tell anyone. They ask me, why? Why don't you tell them? I said, look, half the people here think I'm a fucking weirdo. And they look at me, I said, look, you're Asian, either Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean, whatever. You know about this stuff. They don't know it in the sense of like they're practitioners, but there are parts in the culture that is aware of these things. So when I talk about things like Qigong, they already have some little bit rudimentary understanding of it. That doesn't make them an expert. It just means, you know, it's like talking about, for you Americans, it's like talking about Thanksgiving or Christmas. You know, every American knows about these things. They may not practice it. They may not care much for it, but they already have some grounding and understand what's it about. Maybe not the in-depth part of it, but they do. Indians are the same. A lot of them come from the yoga tradition, Hindu, Muslims a little bit as well. If they're Indian Muslim or Chinese Muslim, they have some understanding of these things. But when it comes to the regular Aussies, the Anglos and the Wogs, they have no fucking idea what I'm talking, and they think I'm a total fucking weirdo. So I don't talk to them about it. I don't bother explaining to them what I do, why I do it, whatever, because for them, their life is about watching television, footy, sport, you know, shopping malls, barbecues, and that's great for them. You know, they find when I talk about these things very strange. So while they are, with their language understanding, sort of rejecting me, I notice sometimes they feel a little bit left out when I'm in the corner over there whispering with someone about these things, and they can't belong to it. I'm not saying they can't be, but there is a fine line between explaining something and justifying something. And you know, and we all know we're justifying it when we go beyond just explaining and we suddenly have to prove everything to everyone all the time. And that gets really tiring. So when my team leader asked me, he goes, you know that you're very weird, you know, you're different to other people. I said to him, yeah, I do. I said, you don't know the half of it. You don't know how different I am to most people. At home, I've got journals and charts proving how different I am now, how much I've actually changed from when I first started. 2020 is a good hindsight and good to see it, but I keep these charts so that I know exactly where I'm heading to next. And what people don't see at work is, because I'm sitting all the time, I've noticed that it's actually the sitting down is making a little kink somewhere in my lower intestine or something, which is actually making me look like I'm putting on weight. So I've started recently, quietly, because we're in a brand new building with brand new bathrooms with a lot of room. When no one's around, I'll quickly go for a walk to get the blood flowing again, and then I'll go to the men's bathroom and where the sinks are when no one's around. So the cubicles are empty, the latrines are empty, there's no one, just me. which is usually a Monday or a Friday, I'll do a couple of bagua sets. Yeah, I'll literally, there's enough room in the bathroom for me to do it. There are no cameras, I'll do it. One bagua, if I do it lightly, will take only 3 to 4 minutes. You know, if I'm rushing, maybe 1.5 minutes to 2. And I feel energized, I'll go home afterwards. In my journal, I'll put a little notch saying, okay, I've done 2 bagua sets today. Because I don't count by days or years, because that's a form of cheating. Because in martial arts, there are too many people who say, I've been a martial arts practitioner for 10 years. And then you ask them, how often do you practice? Oh, twice a week. No, that's not 10 years. To me, 10 years is every day. 10 years. So to get around that, I count the sets or the amount of drills I do, because it's accurate. Because some days I may do 1 set, I'm too tired or I'm too busy. Other days I might do 10. And there have been days where I've done 20 sets because I love it so much. But then the next day I'm totally knackered and I can only do 1 or 2. But at least throughout that training, and when I say sets, it's like your katas. They keep going. Or even if you don't believe in katas, you think so. Most martial artists, most people who are in the fighting profession, they will have drills. If you do boxing, how many times do you go up to the punching bag and you punch it? It's from the moment you start to the moment you finish. That is the part you count. You don't count, oh, today I did boxing. No, you only did half an hour. You only did 1 hour's worth. That is all that was done. And you measure that accurately. It is important, because if on the average it takes you 6 years from starting to get a black belt, and you only train 2 days a week for 2 hours each day, that's 4 hours a week. Imagine how much sooner you can get your black belt if you double that to 4 days a week for 2 hours. Or better yet, you do 6 days a week for 2 hours. That is, so 4 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours a week of training. That means in 1/3 of the time you would have had your black belt. Now maybe the C4 Sensei doesn't give you the black belt because you got to last the 6 years, but you would have done, if you train every day, in 2 years you would have done all the training and practice required, what would have done in 6 years. So you have to find the time, and at work I find the time and I find the place. Now, when I had my own business, which was a tea business, training was more intense because, one, it was my own business. And two, is because it was tea, we typically got in, say, English breakfast in 100 kg sacks. And I would typically, rather than using the forklift or walkie stacker, and there were 10 sacks, I would bear hug the sack, lift it up, and carry it over to the other end of the hall as part of my physical training. And there'd be 10 of them to do, because you got to move them around, and I'd just do all 10. And then when no one's looking, which is usually after working hours, I would sit there and start using the tea bag. Now, English breakfast was good because the leaves were already ground up, or if you got CTC, and I'd start punching the bag. Not fast, but slowly and accurately, use it like a punching bag. And the coolest thing about the paper sacks is that once you've hit it, you can actually see the indentation of where you've hit it, and you can actually could actually see like how you're hitting it, like what angle your fist was, which knuckles were going in deeper versus the other, so you could correct your punch. And then you could also see through the ripple lines that sort of appeared off from the zone of where you've hit it, how intense the shock wave I'm talking about that would go in to someone's body. With a traditional leather punching bag, you don't really see it because it's too smooth, but it still trains the body. So most of the time at work, I'm pretty chill. And when work's done, I will go and repeat what I did in the morning, but this time I'm going home. Go to the train station, wait for the train, go home. When I get home, if it's my turn to cook, I will cook. Now, I regard cooking as a form of cultivation in itself. I regard cooking as both internal and external cultivation. The external part is the ingredients you use and what and how you cook it. The external, that's the ingredient. Sorry, the internal part is that what we do outside, what we can see with our eyes, is a reflection of what happens within our own bodies. So by that cooking, what I mean is, like, say you cook a stew, keep it simple, and you decide, you watch the video on mushrooms. So you'll go to the Chinese supermarket and buy the mushrooms, and mushrooms are generally good for you. So you will cook the mushrooms, make that part of a stew. You'll find out how to cook it so it does taste nice, because you don't want things tasting like shit. In that process, there is already the medicinal side through the mushrooms, and Chinese supermarkets, well-stocked ones, have got lots of different mushrooms. Then you'll go and you see one mushroom, which in English is called lion's mane mushroom. That's a popular one at the moment. In the Chinese supermarket, it's called monkey head mushroom. The good thing about that mushroom, it doesn't taste like much. So you can basically season or flavor it with anything you want. And you know, you go online, you read a book, you learn about how long it takes for the medicinal effects to kick in, you know, on that particular mushroom, and you move on. And through that, you also know, that's the external part. The internal part is, you know, that mushroom going through your body will be healthy because you cooked it yourself, so you know what ingredients you've put into your body. And also, it's the internal process, the mental side, the emotional side. And that flows on through to the Baguazhang training, because if you're eating healthier, you will find that doing martial art or doing any sport, any kind of physical activity, actually gets easier to do. And then more importantly, your mindset also changes, because when there's no shit blocking your mind or distorting your thoughts, you find you have clearer thoughts. So when people get sick at work, I don't tend to get sick. You know, I don't prescribe to the social norm of everyone needs to be sick at the same time. I'm not saying that I'm healthy all the time. My main issue at the moment is, in Sydney, Australia, sometimes we have these small little heat waves where the temperature goes up to 36 degrees Celsius. I don't know what's that in Fahrenheit. You need to work it out. Use your brains. And at work, they will switch on the aircon, and the aircon makes it feel like we're in the middle of fucking Siberia in winter. So it's kind of weird. Outside, it's 36 degrees Celsius and boiling hot, and inside I'm wearing a vest, an undershirt, and a jumper, like it's as if it's winter. But that's another side issue that I regard as training as well in itself, because you know, you have those people around me who say you should have cold showers in the morning, it's really good for your mitochondria. I go, no, I'm not doing that. But, you know, Tony Robbins or whoever says it's really good. No, I'm not doing that. But why not? I says, I grew up with cold showers. The thing is everything you need to translate. And why I've called these series the urban cultivation is because there are a lot of people who are doing martial arts and they come from a poor background. And a lot of the text and a lot of the train mails, basically, we reject because it's telling us to go back to that way of living. There's a lot of things people don't realize, like even weight training, like the diet, where one guy has rice and boiled chicken and no sauce and whatever else. And then, you know, he has to do that for 6 months, and then he's allowed to have a 45-minute purge on all the junk food. And it's like, dude, you obviously don't come from a poor background, because when you come from a poor background, and I think a lot of people can agree with me, you're not going to go back to that shit. You're going to find another way to have a beautiful life. And so for me, no cold showers. The other thing is with my body, because I grew up with cold showers, my body thinks when I'm having a cold shower, it doesn't think it's good for the mitochondria. It says to me, shit, it's winter. I better pack on the fat on the body. So I straight away, within a few days, people go, what happened to you? You were slim before. Now you're like, you're bulked up, like you're gone fat. And I go, I told you, if I have a cold shower, or I'm cold weather, my body thinks it's winter. So it starts packing on the fat, thinking it's winter. So it says, well, how do you get rid of it then? I says, I have a hot shower. As soon as the hot weather comes back, my body just purges it all gone. Within a week, I'm back to being slim again. That is the kind of body I have. And if you're one of those people who go, nah, that's not how it goes, the doctor said, look, stop being a commie. Stop trying to make everyone the same. We're all different. Part of the Bagua Zhang training to get good at is to figure out your own body, to figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. You know, we all would love to go to the countryside and live like an old-fashioned Taoist, but if you're in the city, it's not going to happen. You know, we all think we want to be the monk and bring out the begging bowl and go begging for alms. Yeah, just do that. You look just like the other homeless people at the train station who are begging for coins, money, and food. The body and the mind sees what it already knows in front of it and goes, do you really want to have that life? And it will say, no, I'm not letting you have that life. Because it's not just the begging part that you're asking for. You're asking for the holistic whole thing. That is also the reason which comes to this final point, and that is why people give up their martial arts. Why, when they start the Taoist pursuit, they eventually give it up. They give it up. They don't know why they give it up. They give some excuse, wife, kids, family. No. They give it up because subconsciously they know, they realize subconsciously that in order to get good at it, they have to make sacrifices, they have to make changes, and some of those changes they are not going to like. In the beginning they thought, yeah, I can handle anything, but over time it gets harder and harder and harder. Because it's part of the training, it's part of the cultivation moving up, it's part of learning what you need to learn. Now for me, like I said to you, at work with the Asians and Indians, they understand what I'm getting, but it also allows me to teach them things. My experiences through Bagua Zhang allows me to word it in such a way that they can get it. You know, I've got one guy, he was struggling with his learning about financial stuff at uni. So I started teaching him on, or training him up on, neuropsychology or neurology or neuroplasticity, and showing him tricks of the trade of how to train faster and giving him the tools he needs. And now he's just flying. There's another guy who's having financial difficulties. My experiences on that is helping him out too. But just in small ways, it's not that I'm some great big teacher. I leave that I'm the great mighty teacher for these podcasts. But at work, no. You come to me, I'll try to help you. Otherwise, I'll just be sitting there at my computer, cashiering. And, you know, I had one guy come up to me, he said to me, you know what? I said, what is it? He goes, I've decided I'm no longer going to seek validation from other people and approval from other people. I said, good on you. And he goes, it just occurred to me. And I don't want that in my life. I said, good. And he said, I can't figure out how I came around to this. And I said to him simply, the fact that you're aware that you've been seeking this out from people means that you're aware of this happening means you're already starting the process of getting out. And then he asked me later, he goes, but how is it that this keeps happening? I keep wanting validation and approval. And I said, it's not your fault. I said, it's built into the system. He goes, what do you mean? I said, everywhere you go, all the judges on TV, all the reality shows, even in life, when we're at school, when we have someone else judging us, that's a form of being trained up to seek validation and approval. And it's highly subjective. I said, what you want is goals that are objective. And he said to me, what's a goal that's objective? And I said, if you're a bodybuilder, it's most likely subjective. You're up there on the stage and everyone and the judges are marking you 10 out of 10, 5 out of 10, whatever. But if you're a weightlifter, it's more objective. It's a simple case of, can you lift that dumbbell up or not? And mastery is you surpassing each level. So if you could start off, I'm going to start off small because I'm a weakling, 10 kgs. You know, you got to beat 10 kgs. Either you can or you can't. Then you go up to 15. Either you can or you can't. You go up to 20. Either you can. Then you go up to, say, like, eventually up to 200 kgs. I don't know what the weight is now, but there is a line in the sand. Either you can lift up the dumbbell or you can't. It's objective, and you know it's objective because you can be alone. There doesn't have to be anyone else around you. You either can do it or you can't. But as soon as you need someone else to give you approval, it's now subjective. And a lot of martial arts is like that. It's highly subjective. That's where all the arguments and fights start. Life's not like that. So if you are wanting to be a Taoist and you have chosen your path, your goals as being a Taoist has to be your own. And it has to be measurable and it has to be objective for yourself. The people who say you need a master to train, yeah, you do up to a point. But there is a line in the sand where the master can no longer teach you what you need to learn. You have to cross the line and figure it out for yourself. It's not really figuring it out. You have to cross the line and experience it for yourself. So if you're feeling like your master isn't teaching you everything, it's because one, they don't know everything, and two, they're in the business of figuring out for themselves, having their own experience, and three, you are supposed to figure it out. You're meant to cross the line first. And there are times where, like with me, you have high times and you have low times, and for the vast majority of times, they're pretty ho-hum boring. But, like for me, it's just little things. Got to figure it out yourself. I need to figure out at work where I can do my bagua, which happens to be in the men's toilet, where the wash basins are, because there's enough room. As long as no one's in there, I'll do it. People who want to learn from me, I will teach them something about it in small little bits and pieces. And I only teach them or tell them what they need to know in context. There's no point in telling them the high and mystical stuff. It just loses them. So the bagua is the training. The getting to work is the training. The reading the books is the training. The meditation is the training. The teaching part is the training. The cooking part is the training. I can think of a few other things. Even the pleasure part of going and get a massage is training. Now, I know I've mentioned the pleasure part because some of you are thinking, oh, he's going to talk about dual cultivation. Yeah, for some people, dual cultivation is sex, and that is a form of training. But dual cultivation is actually just, in its broader sense, when two people train together. So like if you're doing boxing and you are punching the punching bag on your own, that's just individual singular training. But once you're in the boxing ring and you are boxing against someone else, fighting them, that is dual cultivation because that is two people training each other together. When I'm playing chess or Go with someone, that's dual cultivation. When I'm at night reading a book out loud because I like to read, and my wife is lying next to me because she's more of an audio person, she listens to me, that is dual cultivation. When I'm teaching someone else about something that is remotely relatable, and they're listening, they're asking me questions, that is dual cultivation. What I'm doing there is not just teaching, I'm also listening to myself and saying, what did I just say to that person? Because typically what I found with me is, I might have been 5 minutes earlier thinking of a, let's call it a mystical problem. I'm just using the word mystical because, what else? I don't know. Something to do with Bagua Zhang. Something that I'm feeling I'm blocked in. Some realization or understanding I don't seem to get when I'm thinking about it. Then someone else will come to me and ask me a question that is completely unrelated to what I'm thinking about. And then in my response to them, I'm listening and hearing what I'm saying. And I'm at the moment of saying it, I'm going, holy fuck, that's the answer to my question. That's what I've been thinking about. It's, of course, so obvious. So while that person has a problem, the universe was kind enough to link that person up with me so that I can also solve my problem in helping them. And now that when I'm thinking, wow, my life is really full on. I was actually trying to make my life a bit more ordinary and plain. It sounds, my life sounds more intense than what it actually is. Most of the time I'm on my own. I'm really just doing my own thing. I just train, live my life with my family, go to work, do my work, and I try to make a good cup of tea, drink the decaf coffee because the normal coffee just makes me a bit hyper at work, and what they supplied for free, I don't really like that type of coffee. I'm a bit boring. I don't go for Piccolo's. You know, and all those fancy coffees. I'm just a Nescafe Classic kind of person, and they don't supply Nescafe Classic. My life doesn't revolve around whether they have a coffee machine or not at work. In fact, if they did have a coffee machine, I'd probably be the one trying to figure out how to use it as part of my, and I'd work it in somehow as part of my cultivation training on being a Taoist. So, I think I'll stop here because I think that's pretty much it. So anyway, I hope this has been helpful and I look forward to your next lot of questions. What can I say, really? Yeah. And if you have a problem, you think I'm trying to make my life more awesome than what it is, which is what one of the book reviews I got a couple of months ago was about, all I'll say to that person is, get a life, you know? Life is what you make of it. It's how you live your life. You know, we got one staff member who bitches a lot. And, you know, we can go down that road, or we can sort of take charge and just say, well, what kind of life do I want? And then work towards that. Find your flow. Find your Tao. If you need it to be some mystical thing that can't be named, then that's what it will be for you. If you need it to be pussy, then that's what it will be for you. You know, the Tao Te Ching talks a lot about how mysterious it is, and then there's bits in there on leadership. But there's also, for those of us who have been to massages and visited the nightlife, you know, we can read in between, we can see that, you know, there's a lot of references to the female sexual energy and the mystery of the vagina, that's for a better word. You know, a lot of things said in the Tao Te Ching is actually, a lot of the translation is actually a form of been corrupted through Confucianism, but that's another story. The point is, I'm going to stop, and I just hope this kind of paints a more ordinary picture of my life. So if you've been upset that I have made my life sound like more magical than what it really is, no, most of my life is about training to climb the mountain, climbing the mountain, the struggles involve climbing the mountain, the daydreaming of climbing the mountain, the thinking about climbing the mountain. The magical stuff is I finally reached the top of the mountain, and it is the least important part of the whole journey. The most important part is actually getting going.